to learn some Torah together. First of all, oh my God, you heard I got a shout out, right? Okay, I'm sorry. He's definitely getting a few coolers on his next few shilas just for that. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about Hanukkah tonight. I figured it's not a great time to do halacha, maybe a little bit about hashgacha, a little bit about the meaning of Hanukkah, just to make sure that I'm not repeating something for people who just heard me speak. I'm not going to say what I said in Stern, but who was in? Was anyone in Rochelle for Shabbos? Perfect. That's exactly the answer I was looking for. Okay. Now I have to remember which one I said in the Rochelle for Shabbos. Yeah, I remember a story. I was flying back from Eretz Yisrael once, and it was one of those leaves Israel at like 1 a.m. kind of flights and gets in at like JFK at 5 in the morning kind of thing, or 6 in the morning. And I was on the plane, and I wanted to sleep because that was my night's sleep. And you know, I'm sitting in coach class, and I lean my seat back because that's what you do when you want to sleep. And the woman behind me called the flight attendant and said to the flight attendant, I'm not comfortable, there's not enough legroom because this guy in front of me is leaning his seat back. And the flight attendant says, okay, I'll tell him not to. And she made me actually pick up my seat the whole flight, so I couldn't sleep the entire flight. Which, by the way, that's not right, right? Like, you're supposed to... No? It's totally... Yeah? Right? I'm totally right about this. If I were that kind of person, Elal would have gotten a very angry letter from me, and that they could have ignored, like they ignore all the other angry letters that they get. So I finally got in and I got through. I don't have like the international speed pass, whatever, you know, when you get in. I don't have any of those things. I don't cut lines at amusement parks. I don't get into the country pass. And finally I got home. I got home just in time to make Shacharis at the Amusement Woodmere. I was totally exhausted. I went to the Israel Woodmere. I davened. I was looking forward to getting home, getting some rest, saying hello to my family. And a guy comes over to me, and he says, Rabbi Leibowitz. I said, yes. He says, remember me? Which, by the way, is the worst thing to do to people, but to me in particular, because I'm very terrible with names and faces, and you know, I'm just bad with people. And he said, I said, remind me. And he said, Josh is dad. Now, I taught for 18 years in DRS, and there were 4 Joshes every year. So, Josh is dead. Oh, hell is Josh? And then he started to then tell me, I got a great Dvar Torah for you. So, what I was really thinking was, I'm tired. I want to go home. Not really in the mood for Dvar Torah. I'm not going to remember it anyway. Please, please let me go. And instead, I said, oh, yeah, let's hear it. And for the next 15 minutes or so, he gave me this Dvar Torah, and you know, at the time I was a little annoyed, but then after I started thinking about it, I'm like, oh my God, that was a great Dvar Torah. He didn't lie. It was as advertised. It was a great Dvar Torah. So I'm going to say so myself. Most of what I'm about to say is not my own. It's from Josh's dad. And it was a pretty great Dvar Torah, I think. I'm going to add a little bit of my own, but I'm not going to tell you what's mine and what's not. But, you know, so the parts that you don't like will be Josh's dad. But he pointed out, you know, something unbelievable about the parshiyos that we're reading right now. And I think there's a major connection to Hanukkah also. You know, Rashi tells us that when Leah was pregnant with Dinah, she was really originally pregnant with a boy, and she davened, she changed to be a girl. Why? Why didn't she daven and change her to be a girl?
So Rachel
wouldn't be less than any of the shvachos, right? Each shvachah was they knew the math. They knew somehow intuition, Ruach HaKodesh, something. Somehow they knew that there were supposed to be 12 shvachim, and Leah did the math. If I have 6, and Rachel and Bila and Zilpah have 2 each, then that's going to leave 2 for Rachel. But if I have 7, then Bila and Zilpah each going to have 2, and Rachel's only going to have 1. And that's humiliating, that she should be less than a shivcha in terms of the development of the Jewish people, in terms of the development of the Klal Yisrael. So Leah didn't want that to happen. She davened that Hashem should change the baby to a girl, which normally, the Gemara points out, you're not allowed to daven for that. Once the baby's there, you're not allowed, once a woman is already pregnant, you're not allowed to daven for a particular gender because it's already decided. When does it get decided? Bio majors? At conception? No? the Gemara assumes 40 days, right? The Gemara assumes 40 days, that 40 days later it gets, but the Gemara assumes also conception. It's just that sometimes in rare types of pregnancies, it can be determined 40 days later. That's the assumption the Gemara makes. We're not going to test it. We're not going to know whether that's, we're not going to discuss, I should say, whether that's accurate or not in terms of our knowledge of science, but that's what the Gemara assumes. So she davened a tefillah, she's not even allowed to daven in order to have Dina changed, because she so felt badly for her sister that Rachel shouldn't have to suffer. So this fellow, Josh's dad, asked the simplest question. He said, I get why Leah felt badly for Rachel. Why didn't Hashem feel badly for Rachel? I mean, what was Hashem's plan? Hashem's plan was, yeah, let her suffer. Let her be less than the Shvachos. Meaning, it seems pretty clear that Dina was originally a boy. And was then changed. Okay, the Marsha says that actually Leah and Rachel were pregnant at the same time, and there was actually a fetal swap. That sometime in the Marsha says too big of a miracle for a boy to change into a girl. So what happened, it was a much lesser miracle. In the middle of the night, and no one was looking, each fetus snuck out and climbed into the other one's womb, and that somehow a lesser miracle. They actually used that as one of the sources. That Marsha is one of the sources for the halachic status of surrogacy. Because there's a big discussion, who's the mom? Is it the genetic mom or the gestational mom? So Dina is Leah's, even though Dina is genetically, according to that Marsha, Dina is genetically Rachel's. But it's, you can't bring proofs from things like that. But at the end of the day, apparently Hashem didn't care. Hashem was planning on giving Rachel only one. Why didn't Hashem care? That is question number one. Question number two, Yosef has a very special title in the life of Yaakov Avinu. Yosef is called by the Chumash a ben zikunim to Yaakov Avinu. You ever hear the term ben zikunim, bat zikunim? Has anyone here ever been called a bat zikunim? Come on, I don't know. I admit it. What's a bat zikunim? Okay, anyone ever heard the term bat zikunim? What does it mean?
You were born?
In your parents' old age, right? Meaning, it's reserved for the youngest child in the family. Usually, it's like a cluster of kids, and then like 7, 8, 10 years later, oh my God, that one was a surprise, right? And the one comes along, right? That's usually what the bat zikunim or ben zikunim is. Who's the ben zikunim of Yaakov? I would think, who's the logical choice?
Binyamin.
He's the ben zikunim of Yaakov, and guess what? He's the ben zikunim of Rachel also. And yet, Yosef is the only one called the ben zikunim. How come Yosef is the ben zikunim? Why isn't Binyamin the ben zikunim? He's not the youngest of his father. He's not the youngest of his mother. How did he get the title ben zikunim? That is question number two. Question number three. There's something like very strange about the naming of Binyamin after he's born. You look in the Chumash. It's right there in Chumash. What happens is, Rachel dies as a result of childbirth. But she doesn't die before giving Binyamin a name. She gives him a name before she dies. And what's the name that Rachel gives Binyamin before she dies? Not Binyamin. She calls him Ben Oni. Then she dies. Then Yaakov turns around and says, Binyamin. I mean, can you imagine? Yaakov, supposedly, this is the one that he loved. This is the wife that he loved more than anything else. The one he worked all those years for. And she tragically dies at a young age. And she has one dying wish. And her one dying wish is that this child that she died for should carry the name Ben Oni. And what does Yaakov do? She's gone now. She won't know. Binyamin. I have a cousin. Not one of my cousins who are in the room right now. I have a few of those too. But I have a cousin who... The story goes, when he was born, at his bris, there was a debate between his mother and his father what to name him before his bris. And right, before the bris, his father said to his mother, "Fine, you win." And then, you know, they get up in the shul by the bris, and it's in the men's section. And the guy doing the kriyas shem says, "V'yikarei shmo b'Yisrael," and leans over to hear the name from the boy's father. And my uncle whispers a name. The guy calls out the name, and it's the name my uncle wanted, not the name that his wife wanted. And my uncle turns around and goes, "Ha! they're divorced. Right? Obviously. Meaning there's something not healthy about such a marriage. If one of them is going to choose one name and the other one's going to choose another, and they're going to, you know, and they're going to trick each other. They're going to, oh yeah, no problem, I'll give the name you want, and then switch it. That's not healthy. Yaakov and Rachel, he's supposed to love her. And after she dies, he switches the name on her. What is going on? What does Ben Oni mean? So it is somewhat of a negative name, meaning it's a name that represents some trauma that Rachel suffered, that's for sure. But still, how can you switch it? And one final question. Hanukkah is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah, right? For obvious reasons. Hanukkah is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. But it's hinted to in the Torah. There are a few Ramazim in the Torah to Hanukkah. Chassidish Sfarim like this a lot, but it's really a Midrashim. Chazal already find hints to Hanukkah in the Torah. Anyone know any hints to Hanukkah in the Torah? So there are two in this week's parasha that I know. There are probably more because people try to find Hanukkah Ramazim. The pasuk says, Tvarach Tavach V'Hachein. Tevach V'Hachein. Last word of Tevach is a Ches. Last letter of Tevach is a Ches. V'Hachein. Ches plus V'Hachein. You jumble the letters, it spells, you guessed it, Chanukah. Okay, that's one of the famous Ramazim for Chanukah. What's the beginning of that pasuk? The beginning of that pasuk is Vayar Yosef Itam Es Binyamin. Yosef saw Binyamin. And when Yosef saw Binyamin, what follows at the end of the pasuk is a remez to Chanukah. Somehow Binyamin symbolizes, represents in some way Chanukah. There's another remez. Yosef talks to Binyamin. He finally has a conversation. Elkim Yechancha Bini. Chancha, Chein, Chanoch, Chanukah. It's really a lashon of Chein. The Yud and the Chav, the Yud at the beginning and the Chav at the end are added on to the root Chein. But Ches, Nun, Chav are the core letters of Chanukah. So both times we have Ramazan to Chanukah in this week's parasha, it's in the context of Binyamin. And in the context of the way Yosef relates to Binyamin. So what's all this about? So Josh's dad suggested the following. And I think this was brilliant. I don't know, I haven't seen it anywhere else. I asked some rabbinic colleagues if you're allowed to say this, and they said, yeah, they think it's pretty good. He suggested the following. God's plan was that Rachel was going to have two Shvatim. You know who they were going to be? Ephraim and Menashe. Who calls Ephraim and Menashe Shvatim? No less in authority than Yaakov Avinu refers to Ephraim and Menashe as Shvatim. Ephraim and Menashe are Keruven and Shimon, you believe. They're like Reuben and Shimon. They're as much Shvatim as Reuben and Shimon. That was the plan. Leah wasn't in on the plan. She didn't know. She didn't understand. And in a certain sense, that really elevates Rachel above everybody else. Because not only is she going to have two Shvatim just like Bilhah and Zilpah will have two Shvatim, but she is going to break the mold because she is going to be able to carry on the status of Shvatim to another generation. Something that even Leah couldn't do. And guess what? She did have two Shvatim. She had Ephraim and Menashe, meaning even from Yosef, she had two grandchildren of Shvatim. Ephraim and Menashe count as Shvatim. But Leah wasn't thinking in that way. And Leah was like, why is my sister going to lose out? Why is she only going to have one? So Leah davens that Dinah should be a girl. And Dinah was a girl. And then Rachel had an extra, one that wasn't supposed to be there. And that's Binyamin. Binyamin was the Shevet that wasn't even supposed to be. Wow. If you have that outlook of things, you understand a lot of the questions we started with. Yosef is called Ben Zakunim. Why? That's what he was supposed to be. He's called the Ben Zakunim. He was destined to be. It was disrupted by Leah's tefillah. Binyamin became like, almost like a grandchild. How do I know he became like a grandchild? When Yosef refers to Binyamin, he actually calls in the Torah, he actually uses the word, Bini. He wasn't Binyamin's father. You know, sometimes in families, you have like that, like there's that young child that the parents treat like it's their grandchild. You know, they're my family for sure. One of my cousins, who is in the room, the father told me once that they were telling her, you better start behaving or else I'm going to start treating you like your siblings. you remember that? So the meaning, I tell that to my daughter sometimes because I like the line. I'm gonna start treating you like the rest of them if you don't behave, because it's so obvious I don't. You know, she's the youngest, she's the basakunim, she's the also the only girl in my family, but and yours. But so she gets treated a little bit differently. So Binyamin is that grandchild-like child. Yosef is the ben zakunim because he's the last ben to Yaakov and to Rachel. And maybe that explains the silent debate between Yaakov and Rachel about Binyamin's name. Right? Rachel, not knowing the plan, calls him Ben Oni. This is the one that made up for my suffering. I would have suffered terribly. The humiliation of being less than one of the shachos had it not been for this child. So he's Ben Oni, and Yaakov says, no, you're wrong. He's Binyamin. He's not Ben Oni. He wasn't a son of affliction that you would have experienced had Leah not changed her child into Dinah. Yaakov recognizes that Binyamin wasn't needed to alleviate any sort of suffering. Rachel would have had two shvatim regardless. Binyamin represents the idea, and this is the key, this is what I'm really trying to drive at. Binyamin represents the idea that when you think you're finished, when you think it's over, when you think you're done, when you think you can't do anymore, when you think you can't go anymore, you can still do more. There's still something else to be accomplished. Binyamin represents the idea of breaking all barriers. There were supposed to be shvatim up until Yosef, and then came Binyamin. That's what Binyamin represents. The Shvatim are all born outside of Eretz Kanan, Binyamin in Eretz Kanan. He's different. He's an addition. He's beyond what they were supposed to be. And that might be the connection between Binyamin and Chanukah, because the story of Chanukah is a story that should have been the story of the end of an era. It was supposed to be. We lost the ideological battle. The Greeks won, which we lost. The glory of the Beis HaMikdash was going to end, and it's the koach of Binyamin that says that we can accomplish more, that when things seem like they're done, they're over, we've hit a wall, there's nothing more to be done, that's where Binyamin comes in, and we have more Kedushas HaMikdash. So the Gemara asks, my Chanukah? The famous Gemara in the second paragraph of Masechet Shabbos, my Chanukah? So the Gemara responds with not a story of a war, but with a story of one little bottle of oil that managed to last for eight times as long as it should have. And that's Chanukah. That somehow represents Chanukah. You know, we're used to miracles. We're not used to seeing them, but we're used to hearing about them and learning about them. As far as, if you have to rank miracles, greatest miracle that ever happened. Kriyas Yamsuf, right? Everyone always says Kriyas Yamsuf. Rav Mendel Blachman from Kerev Yavna told us that he thinks it's the fact that Makom Aron Eina Min Amida, which in the Beis HaMikdash, right, in the Kodesh HaKodesh, and if let's say there was from here to here is, let's say, 4 feet, and from here to here is 2 feet. My spatial stuff is way off, so I'm probably wrong about that. But, you know, the Aron was over here. If you were to measure from one end of the Aron to the from one end of the Aron to the end of the room, and one end of the Aron to the end of the room, it would be the same measurement as measuring from end to end. That the Aron just didn't take up any space. Why is that the greatest miracle? Because I could picture Kriyas Yamsuf. There are picture books. I could imagine drawing a picture of it. I don't know how to draw a picture of that. Meaning it defies the laws of physics. But I'll tell you what wouldn't be on my list of top 10 miracles. That a little jug of oil lasted for 8 days. You know why? And I don't mean to brag, but that miracle happened to me. I know, it's crazy, right? I had a car. It was an awesome car. It's a Toyota Corolla. It was like very, very, very blue. It could be found anywhere in a crowd because it had like this electric blue color. It was beautiful. And my car died. So we got it to the mechanic. It had to get towed, I think. And the mechanic says, oh, your battery just died. You just need a new battery. I'm like, okay. Then he goes, how old is this car? I told him how old the car is. And he said, oh my God, this battery should have, this is the original battery on the car. It should have died like 2-3 years ago. That's the Hanukkah miracle. Right? Meaning the battery had only so much juice, and it lasted way longer than it was supposed to. I had the Chanukah miracle. You know, when I speak places, my kids come with me very often, and you know, people come over and say Yashar Koach, Nes Shabbat, whatever. But my kids are like in the crowd, not here, but they, you know, and they love to come over to me afterwards and tell me everyone's snarky comments that they heard. They love it. So I was giving this shiur in a community this past Shabbos, and I mentioned I said I don't mean to brag about that same line. I don't mean to brag, and my son told me the guy behind him said, "Yes, you do," and stormed out of the room. Like, I don't think that's my problem. I think that guy's got some issues. But so as far as miracles go, that's Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the miracle of my Toyota Corolla. I mean, that's the great miracle of Hanukkah. Why is that the miracle of Hanukkah? It's not because it's such a great miracle. Because you know what? That miracle repeated itself in the times of Chazal. The Gemara Masechet Tainis tells us that Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, I think it was, repeated it. He did even better. He didn't have any oil. And his daughter accidentally lit Shabbos candles with vinegar, and he said, "Oh, the same God that says that oil shall light will say vinegar shall light. That's even better. No oil," and he made it happen. We're not having a yantah for them. What the Gemara means when it says my Hanukkah and it tells the story of the oil is, what does Hanukkah represent? What's Hanukkah about? The story of the oil is, you have this much, you can do more. I have an uncle, a different uncle, lives in Israel. And I remember when I was in yeshiva in Israel, I was trying to like figure out how people make it in Israel, like how the finances work out. So I asked him, I said, "You know, how do you do it? How do you make it?" He said, "It's easy. If I make $100, I spend $120 and I save the rest." Oh, easy. That's Israeli math. Meaning that's living on a certain amount of bitachon. That's saying, I can get this far, but I'm not going to be told I can only get this far. I can go further. You're going to tell me that oil is going to last for one day? That oil can go further. You're going to tell me Klal Yisrael can only go to here, that Klal Yisrael can't have the Mikdash anymore? Klal Yisrael can have the Mikdash. You're going to tell me that the Shvatim are done, that there are not going to be any more Shvatim? There are going to be more Shvatim! That's what Binyamin represents. The Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, tells us that when we arrived at the Yamsuf, which Shevet was the first one to jump in? So different opinions of Chazal. The Gemara in Sota says, Binyamin. Why? Because we got where we can't go any further. And when you can't go any further, who goes in? Binyamin goes in. Because yes, you can go further. The Medrash tells us in the Pasuk, Binyamin ze'ev yitrov, that Binyamin extends milachorov milafanav, milachorov milafanav, that Binyamin extends backwards and forwards, and the Gemara says, and the Imre Hemis rather says, that that's a reference to Tosefes Shabbos, that we add on to Shabbos. Who teaches us that we can add on to Shabbos? Binyamin. Binyamin is Chanukah, Chanukah is Binyamin. Binyamin teaches us that we're never out. We're never finished. You know what the word for retirement is in Biblical Hebrew? Anyone know? Right. You're all right. It doesn't exist. There's no word for retirement. There's no word for finish. You wake up every day and you go further. We talk about, the Medrash talks about Sari Imenu, that Sari Imenu, the Pasuk says, live for 100 plus 20 plus 7 years. So the Medrash tells us, Tavo Bas Bita, that Esther Hamalka, when in the times of the Megillah, had to figure out what to do, whether she should step up and try to be counted and try to do something for the Jewish people. It says, Tavo Bas Bita Shal Sarah. It's the great-granddaughter of Sarah that came and decided to. Why? Why the great-granddaughter of Sarah? So Yosef Nechemi Kornitzer explains, because when we're told that Sarah lived for 100 years and 20 years and 7 years, what it really means to say is that Sarah never stopped growing. She never stopped becoming better. She never stopped advancing in her Yiddishkeit. She never said, "You know what? I did enough. I put in all those decades of childlessness. I put in all those decades of traveling around with my husband and, you know, bringing in all these people to my home. And enough already." She never said that. So comes Esther, who similarly had done a lot of wonderful things. She was a good girl her whole life. And now she's in this impossible situation. And she had to have the courage to do a little bit more. And who knows, maybe that next step is going to be the one that's going to make her place in history. And guess what? For Esther, it was. What would Esther have been had she not stepped up and actually challenged Haman and Ahasuerus? Had she not moved in that moment? She would have been another nice girl in history. But we wouldn't be talking about her. There wouldn't have been a Megillah about her. You know, in all the years that I have been teaching I haven't been teaching post high school for that long, but I don't know, actually, and now it is. I think my ninth year teaching post high school. So I always ask the boys when they come back from yeshiva in Israel. And he said, like, what do you want to accomplish here in, well, first it was Lake Shlomo and Woodmere, affiliated with hell, then it was Lander, now it's YU. What do you want to accomplish here? Now that you're finished with your years in yeshiva. You know, most of them respond, I want to maintain what I got in Israel. I want to keep what I got in Israel. I always tell them, you've already failed. You're 19 years old, you're 20 years old, and you're done? Your goal is, okay, now I want to, you know, just stay steady? That's the dream? That's the ambition? Then you failed. The goal is always, always, no matter where you are, to always grow, to become a better Jew, to enhance your avodas Hashem, that's always got to be the goal. It doesn't matter if you're 20, if you're 50, if you're 100, that's always the goal. You know, you can look around, you can find people like this. Klal Yisrael is about to celebrate the Siyum HaShas with the Daf Yomi. Your grandfather started Daf Yomi 15 years ago, right? I happen to know her grandfather very well. He's my father. His father died when he was 7 years old. He was a very wild kid, based on what he tells me. Spent all of his days in the principal's office, had to be sent away from home to live with an aunt and uncle because whatever, they couldn't handle him. And, you know, was in these yeshivas where he just got smacked around a lot. And he put his life together and he became, you know, a person who, you know, got married and had children and raised them correctly and has still a job that supports his family. But learning, total learning, you know, well, it didn't come easy. Like, he sort of missed out on the whole thing. And then at the age of whatever, he said, I'm going to start Daf Yomi. Now he's finishing Shas for the second time. Because he didn't say when he's 19 years old, when he's 20 years old, I'm done growing. I just want to maintain what I got in my year in Israel. That's what Binyamin teaches us. That we never finish growing. And the Gemara says that I'll close with this. There's a Medrash that tells us that the Pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu's face would shine, had a gleam to it. So the Medrash asks, Mehecha Natal Moshe Karnei Ahod, where did Moshe Rabbeinu get the gleam to his face? So the Medrash says, because he finished writing the Torah, and probably because of the little aleph at the beginning of Vayikra, he had a little extra ink. So he took the extra ink and he rubbed it on his face, and that's how he got the shine on his face. So Midrashim speak Midrashically, right? That's why the Midrashim. It doesn't mean your face doesn't shine. When you put ink on it, your face gets gross when you put ink on it. No, what's the Medrash really telling us? What the Medrash is telling us is that Moshe Rabbeinu accomplished something that is greater than any other human being since or before had ever accomplished. He wrote, quite literally, God's autobiography. He's the one, he wrestled it away from the Malachim, who wanted it, according to the Maran Shabbos Daf Pei Tes, and he brought it down to us. He was the scribe for God's autobiography. You know what you do after you finish that? When you wrote the book that you could find in a dresser drawer in any hotel room, the best-selling book of all time, you say, I go on the speaking circuit maybe, I'll retire. I'm done. But Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Medrash, realized there are a couple of drops of ink left. And as long as there are a couple of drops of ink left, there's what to accomplish. And if a person wants to shine, a person wants to have karnei ahod, that's where you get it from. You get it from those last drops. I once gave this as a speech right before Ne'ilah. It's a good pre-Ne'ilah speech, right? Like, you know, when you have nothing left in the tank, come on, right? To take those last couple of ounces of energy that you don't even think you have, and you use them and you grow with them, and that's what the Medrash tells us. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu got the Karnei Ahod. So I think it's just an important hashkafa that we should all have going forward throughout our lives. It's not always about where you are, but it's always about the direction that you're going in. And if a person thinks that they're just going to stay steady, then it's not going to work out. Throughout our lives, it should always be a growth experience. Look, sometimes growth means that you're learning chesed and davening like 20 hours a day or whatever, I don't know. Now, I remember my days in yeshiva, how I would go to sleep at night and have dreams about the sugya that I was learning. Yeah, it's been a long time since that happened. But sometimes growth means you figure out how to balance all the pressures of life and still find a few minutes to daven and still find a few minutes to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's growth, because that's something you didn't have to do in the past. But it's not that you're on the down. That's growth. Sometimes growth means you have to figure out how to remain someone who's Ovid Hashem, Ovedes Hashem, even though you have financial stress and family stress and other things that might come up. Sometimes growth means you have to figure out how to be a better servant of the Ribbono Shel Olam in great success, when there's no pressure on you at all. And it's so easy to just take it easy. But find a new project. Find something else to do. And that ultimately, I think, is the story that Josh's dad taught us. Of Binyamin, of Hanukkah, and Be'ezras Hashem. We should all take that idea to always, every single day of our lives, one after the other, to grow and grow and grow, Be'ezras Hashem, with every ounce of energy that Hashem grants us. Have a Be'eluchin and Lichbigu Hanukkah.